Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
With the third pick in the 2022 draft, the Houston Rockets select Jabari Smith Jr. from Auburn University.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So, Blankers, I had a dream last night that somehow Jabari Smith fell to number three for the Rockets. Also had a nightmare that Ryan Pressly blew a three-run lead in the ninth. Woke up, both of those things were true. But I'm going to focus on the good. I think the Killer Bees are a positive show. We always, we're glass half full.
We're an honestly positive show.
Yeah, we're glass half full. And look, it's the Jabari party in the city of Houston. It's a Jabari party with the Killer Bees. How in the world did the Houston Rockets, selecting number three, come away with the best player in this draft?
I have no freaking idea. But I mean, to say that they killed it, to say that this draft could not have gone any better for the Houston Rockets is an absolute understatement, because my fear was going to be when Woj started tweeting and you and the three of us were kind of in a group text, I was like, you know, the big fear is going to be that we're going to get stuck with Chet, which I didn't feel as strongly as you, but I'm like, there's no way that OKC holds their ground and sticks with the guy that they basically have been analyzing the most to say they're going to be, that's who they're going to take. I mean, is it reactionary? Is it going to be the domino effect where now that Banchero goes first, now does OKC go, well, we spent all this time on Chet, but Jabari's there, we got to take him, right? But instead, they followed serve. They did what they were going to do all along. And lo and behold, the best damn player that we both thought in this entire draft fell right into the Rockets' lap. And I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, see, you had the initial fear there. Oh, boy, Banchero's going number one to Orlando. Uh-oh, that means Oklahoma City's going to take Jabari, and that means, uh-oh, to an extent, that the Rockets were going to be stuck with Chet Holmgren. But for the Rockets to come away with Jabari Smith is unbelievable. And I've watched a lot of Auburn games this year. They were number one in the country for a long time, one of the best teams in all of college basketball. And we're both basketball junkies. You watch a fair amount of college ball. I watch a fair amount of college ball. So I'm pretty familiar with Jabari's game. It's why you and I have been saying since January that Jabari is the best player in this draft.
Yep.
It looked like everybody else thought that as well until one team, Orlando, didn't. And then Oklahoma City followed that up as well with Chet. So after Jabari went, I went back and was reviewing some film, watching some tape on Jabari, watching a lot of the stuff I could find on him. And I really believe, now this is his high-end upside, because we know about him. He's a very, very tall. He's an athletic, big, that can knock down the threes at over a 40% clip, can play defense better than anybody else at the four spot in this draft, can defend. Some people are saying 1 through 5. I think it's probably 2 through 5 with the ability to switch up every now and then on a quick point guard, but a very, very good defender. But watching his offensive game, this is the very high-end upside. I'm not saying he's going to be this player coming into the NBA this year, but I believe that if, you know, he works on his craft, and from everything that we hear about Jabari, he's a very hard worker, son of a former player, cousins of Kwame Brown, which kind of scares you a little bit.
Yeah.
But watching his game, he reminds me of Kevin Durant. Because of his size, because of his ability to shoot, and if you look at the measurables of Kevin Durant coming into the NBA, almost identical. 6'10", 215 for Durant. 6'10", 220 for Jabari. Look at their college numbers. Durant was a 40% three-point shooter, took a little under 6 per game. Jabari, 42% three-point shooter, took 5.5 per game. The biggest difference between the two right now is that Kevin Durant had a better handle than Jabari currently has, that Kevin Durant could get to the rim better than Jabari currently can. But if Jabari can add that element to his game, I think the Rockets have a player with the high-end upside. I'm not saying he's going to be Kevin Durant, but the high-end upside, the total top of his ceiling, the total top of his range, to be an offensive player similar to Kevin Durant.
See, that's the thing is I always think it's as much as I was critical of Chet being compared to KD, because I didn't think that he had the first step and the explosiveness that Durant has, I think it's almost unfair to compare anybody to Kevin Durant because he's so damn good. But I think when I'm right there with you. When I was watching a lot of film on him last night as well, I'm like, the fluidity in which he gets to his spots, gets his shots, and the fact that for as much as we say the mid-range game is such a lost art in the NBA and it's discouraged now, as much as it used to be a key element to anybody that was looked at as a true scorer in this league, he has all of those things. He can face up and knock down a three. Mm-hmm. He can give you that stop and pop. He can work from the elbow in. He has all the different offensive game that you'd like in a guy playing the position that he plays. But like you said, he also has the size to where he can defend and he can do some things athletically. Because I think in terms of the fluidity of his athletic characteristics, Paolo's bigger, but I don't think he's close to as fluid as Jabari is. And I love the way Jabari can cover both ends of the floor.
See, that's the thing when I watch Jabari, too, and why I think, and have thought this for a long time, of why he is better suited to the NBA as a Chet or as Paolo. I think all three of those players are actually better suited to the NBA game, where there's more spacing, there's more room, you have better players around you offensively that draw attention as well. But the fluidity that Jabari has does not compare to Chet. It does not compare to Paolo, because Chet's very, like, Chet very much looks like a baby giraffe running up and down the floor, right? Like, he has a ton of upside. We were talking about the boom and bust of Chet, but he does have the choppiness to his game. He does look a little bit awkward. It's difficult for him to get from point A to point B because of that choppiness. I think Banchero is more, like, further along than Chet Holmgren in terms of, like, his fluidity. But even that, it's kind of a bulldozing fluidity, right? Like, it's a little bit clunky. Like, he's not as quick. He's not as agile as Jabari. So I think that Jabari, I don't think he's as good an offensive player right now as Banchero, but I believe, like, I think that Jabari, if we're just looking at a scale of 1 to 10 coming into the NBA, I think that his offense is probably like a 5 or a 6, but with a ceiling of a 9 or a 10.
See, remember I
Whereas
told
Banchero,
you.
Whereas Banchero, I feel like it's a 6 or 7 right now with a ceiling of like a 7 or an 8.
Right. Remember when I told you going into the draft, the highest ceiling of all these guys to me was still Jabari because he was already there further along than Chet, but it also told you there was so much more he could still do. He could get stronger. He could get, you know, a little bit more physical in terms of it with his weight and his conditioning. Or he could stay pretty much where he is, get a little stronger, but still develop his offensive game to where he has even more range and he has the ability to do more things, because we know how versatile the league is right now with wing players. So you look at all those things, and I think that's why we both said, regardless of the comps, this is the guy that is the most talented. This is the best player in the whole draft. So the fact that Orlando did what they did, and they're getting all kinds of praise for being able to keep it under wraps. You got the number one pick. You can choose whoever the hell you want. You're not going to trade out of it for most, you know, for the most part. There was nothing that's going to knock you over to trade out of it. So you could have taken whoever you wanted. But the fact that it set such a domino effect for the rest of the top three, and even the top five for that matter, and the Rockets sat there and going, oh my God, like, you know, we were going to be okay with whoever was left of the three guys that were rumored to be 1, 2, 3. But the fact that for pretty much everybody's top three, except for Charles Barkley, who had Paolo on top,
yep,
everybody else we talked to said, this is the number one player in the whole draft. You were worried about how the lottery went, and now he falls right there for you to go. And you know what? Here's the other thing, Jeremy. He's the perfect fit for this team, too.
Yep.
Paolo could have made it work. Chet would have been a project of about 3 years.
Yep.
This is the kid right now with his age and skill set that fits the best for this team.
A lot of people are talking about the front court with him and Şengün and how they complement each other, which I think that they do. Şengün, I don't think, is ever going to be like an all-defensive NBA first-team guy. But you get a good defensive dude next to him at the four, I think that suits those two better than it would if it was like Şengün and Banchero, because now you're looking at huge liability in the paint with what you do defensively. And then on top of that, I was thinking about, you know, Steven Silas and kind of putting myself in the mind of Steven Silas. The pick and rolls and the pick and pops with Jalen Green and Jabari, like, it just had me salivating. Like, even if he's not rolling, just pick and pop. The dude shot 42% from three-point range last year. He shot 41%. So a bunch of the analytic people went out and they measured, like, how far he was shooting some of these college threes. NBA range, he was shooting 41% last year in college basketball. So a Jalen Green, Jabari Smith pick and pop game, like, I'm can't wait to watch that next season.
Let's start with the defense, too. From the defensive aspect of it, Şengün's going to live in the paint. He's not going to guard on the perimeter. Jabari can. So Jabari can go out and do what Şengün should never be asked to do. He can take a big and he can go out and switch out on a high screen and roll and get caught on a two guard or a small forward, and he can hang. If you get a face-up four that wants to play on the wing, he can stay in front, and he can also contest.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes a lot of pressure off of Şengün so that Şengün can just hold it down in the paint, and now your defense got better. A lot of times they were criticized last year, and we were big on that. No rotations, really.
Laziness.
No plan and laziness in terms of how you defended and got out and contested shots or rotated when the ball was swinging. Now you've got two post players that can do exactly what you need to do with, depending on how versatile the guys they're playing up against are, and it makes the floor have to be more open for your other guys to be able to guard who they're guarding.
The Rockets had the worst defense in the league last year. They give up 118 points per game, worse than anybody. They're going to be a lot better on the defensive side of the ball with Jabari right when the season tips off. You instantly got better defensively. One of the things, too, like just looking at this draft and the kind of like started to rub me the wrong way is how people talk about Chet Holmgren being a better shooter than Jabari. That's not even close to the case. Jabari, we mentioned, 42% from three-point range last year. He took 5.5 a game. And he was doing a lot of like, okay, give me the ball, triple threat position, jab step, rise and fire. A couple of times off the dribble, rise and fire when he had a really good defender. He's very good, difficult shot maker as well. Chet, 39%, worse than Jabari, and he took two less threes per game in a much worse conference. So Jabari right now is a better shooter than Chet Holmgren. Also shot 80% from the line. Chet shot 72%. But I look at Jabari's upside. Defensively, we know he's going to be very good on the defensive end. We already know that worst case scenario, he's somebody that can knock down 3-point shots and can hit some really good mid-range shots as well at a pretty high clip. I think Jabari has the upside to be a superstar offensively. And I look at Kevin Durant as an example. What did Kevin Durant do coming out? Because I don't think Kevin Durant's a better athlete than Jabari.
No.
I don't think Kevin Durant's like a
Kevin
better
Durant's
leaper.
Never going to fill out. Jabari has the ability to fill out, and he's already filled out a little bit.
The one difference between Kevin Durant and Jabari that I see, because Jabari's as good a shooter as Durant was coming out of college. They're the exact same size. I think the athleticism's on par between the two. The biggest difference was Durant could beat his defenders off the dribble and get to the rim. I think Jabari has that in his game. He didn't show it in college. He's going to have to improve it. But if he does, if he adds that element to the game, why couldn't he score 25 points per game? He can literally do everything else on the floor.
And Kevin Durant developed that kind of extra killer instinct once he got comfortable in the league. He was a scrawny kid when he played in Seattle his first year, and he had to fill out. Jabari's only 19 years old. If this kid goes through one more growth spurt or matures just a little bit more, which you assume he's going to mature at least physically, he has the sky's the limit in terms of the versatility that he presents. And if he starts to create his own shot more, like I said, I'm going to go back to that word, fluidity. When he has the ball in his hands, he looks so smooth the way he changes directions or he stops and pulls up. And that's going to be tough to defend. And if he can mature and his body matures along with him, you don't have to worry about a Chet putting on weight. You don't have to worry about Apollo, you just have to try and find a way he's going to fit in. This is the kid that was the perfect fit for this team, and the Rockets could not have done better than what they did by getting him.
Let's keep this rolling on the other side. If you want to weigh in, you have some questions, some thoughts, we'll take them. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Jabari Smith somehow is in a Rocket, and it's the Jabari Party on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
I love Jabari. I mean, obviously, he went to Auburn. I saw him play a lot. I think he's going to be a terrific player. He's built for today's NBA. He can guard 2, 3, 4. I mean, he can guard a little point. I mean, he's got a fantastic work ethic and energy.
That was Charles Barkley talking about Jabari Smith back when we had him on the Killer Bees. The Rockets selecting number one Jabari Smith at the number three spot, getting the best player in the draft, sliding right to them. Kelly Eco covers the Rockets for The Athletic, will be joining us at 12:30. And Chris Mad Dog Russo will be joining us at the 1 o'clock hour. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham On the Twitch line, Mr. Brostash saying, I think Şengün benefits more with Smith than Banchero. What do y'all think? I think so, too, because the defensive element there. You don't have to worry about two post players that can't guard.
Yes, the versatility element, right, of being able to guard the perimeter.
And the ability to space on the offensive end.
True, because they're both big bodies. If you put Paolo and Şengün, they'd be fighting over the block, and I think there'd be a lot of congestion. I think that when Şengün is in the game and if he's operating on the post, Jabari can easily slide out to the wing, and he's not going to hurt you. He's not going to clog the lane, and if they do try to double-team on Şengün, he's going to be one of the guys that's going to benefit with kick-out, butt-naked three-point shots that he could, he's proven he can knock down. I think that when you look at, and we'll get into it in depth, a little more depth of the three guys that they got in this draft, they filled needs across the board, but the one thing that they got with all three guys is the ability to shoot. They didn't get that a year ago, and so it's almost like the old Rudy T inside-out philosophy that if you've got a Şengün who, much as he's tried to be what he's not a three-point shooter. He belongs in the paint. But if he's in the paint with his offensive array of moves and he gets better, it's just only going to open it up and going to really kind of demand that the guys you put around him have to be able to shoot the three ball.
He's a good passer, too.
Yes.
He's a good passer. You can put him on the high post. You can put him in the elbow and create some opportunities that way as well. So I do love the pairing a lot more. I think Smith and Şengün will work a lot better together than a Banchero and Şengün. 2141, I'm not an overly big Rockets fan, but I'm a huge Auburn fan, and I cannot wait to watch him play here, talking about Smith. Houston will love him. The dude is a competitor and works his tail off. His defense is fantastic, and the dude can shoot with the best of them. Getting another Auburn guy back in Houston has me pumped. See, worst-case scenario for Jabari Smith, he's somebody who, again, I think has a very high ceiling. I think he can become an elite scorer in the NBA, an NBA that currently emphasizes shooting ability. And you have a dude that's 6'10 that made more threes in college basketball history of anybody 6'10 or taller. So he has the size, which is important. He's got the athleticism, which is important. And he can shoot the heck out of the basketball. I think he has the potential of being an elite offensive player. He has to work to that part of his game, though. He's not currently there now.
It's versatility as well, because you say today's NBA game, it's versatility, athleticism, and you have to be able to shoot. And those are the three characteristics that you can just absolutely stamp in permanent ink that on any report you do on Jabari Smith.
The two things that are holding him back from being an elite scorer that I think he's going to work himself into being very good at is he needs to get better with the dribble, although he wasn't bad at that. He wasn't bad at Auburn. He just didn't showcase it a lot. So can he add that to his game? And Bruce Pearl, Cody was in his media availability yesterday, and Stoots talked to Pearl, or was part of it, and Pearl said that that's what he has to add to his game, is the ability to beat dudes on the dribble. And I would like him to get better at getting to the rim, because there's a lot of times where he'll beat his defender, and all of a sudden he's shooting a fadeaway from the elbow. So he needs to attack the rim a little bit better as well. But if he can add those two elements to his game, I think he will be an elite offensive scorer. But worst case scenario, if he doesn't add that to his game, you have a very good three-point shooter. I think he's going to be a 40% three-point shooting guy. And then somebody who's going to be very good defensively, who's also somebody who works very hard. He has a high motor. So I think you upgrade just there. Like, defensively, you're going to be much better next season. Offensively, will he be better than Christian Wood as a rookie? Maybe not. But he has way more upside and potential than a Christian
Wood. Now, let me give you this, too, because I agree with you. The ball handling is going to come. And there are ways that they are going to have guys that can work with him. But he just playing in a system like this, where there's going to be a lot of, you know, everything is going to be stressed, turning live ball turnovers into fast breaks, getting out and running off the outlets. So essentially, he's going to learn real quick. If he's the wing and the ball is either live ball turnover or it's kicked out on a poke check or a rebound, he's going to have to push it. And the more he pushes it, the practice he gets with it, the better he will be at dribbling the basketball. The other thing that I think that we have to bring into this equation is because he is so big, because like you said, he is over 6'10", when Dream gets a hold of him, and Dream starts giving him just a few post moves and the ability to start on the post and slide to the elbow and be able to bring your defender into a more vulnerable position. You know, guys pay hundreds of, have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for sessions with Dream in the summers, from Kobe and LeBron to Amari Stoudemire and others. It's free, and Dream is going to work with this kid, and just giving him one or two things is going to be a huge difference maker.
And what's scary to me about Jabari is that he already has a couple of those elements. They just need polishing. Yep. So it's not like it's a foreign thing to him. You see the baby steps in his post game that already have some of that, and he's a very smart kid. He's obviously very heads up. Just go watch him play a game. Like a ball falling out of bounds, knows where to tip it to his teammate. Like he's a winning player.
They played A&M several times, yep, too, and I watched a lot of those games, too. And just his ability... And this is something that you, and a lot of times you can teach it, but it takes time. But because it comes natural to him, when he sees the ball swing to the weak side and then kind of into the paint, he knows to get to the other side of the court to create space.
Yes.
He knows where he needs to be on the floor. And that's a key element that a lot of kids struggle with coming into the NBA.
And then you add a Jalen Green who's going to draw attention to that as well. This offense could really take off. And it's going to take time. Like, it's not going to happen in year one, but with the two. Like, let's not get too lofty here. I don't think the Rockets are going to be a playoff team next season. But you have the foundation, I think, of what could be a very good 1-2 with Green and Smith on the offensive end, and then what Smith's going to bring you defensively, I think, is going to rise the whole ship for the Rockets as well. 8755 can't get right, Mike. As a Houston fan, go for the Texans, Astros, and Rockets. Things are starting to look up for all three teams. I know the Texans have to have had a slow start, but Rockets, wow. My question is the center position. Has it been answered yet? How are the Rockets going to use Jabari? I think next season Jabari and Şengün are your two post players. I would love at some point, I don't think it's going to be this offseason, maybe it's next offseason when you're trying to make that jump, I want a third big that is a rim-protecting big, like a Clint Capela type, somebody who's going to protect the rim. He doesn't have to score for me, but you have to be able to block the shots. You have to be somebody that can defend at the rim. That way you're trying to create less opportunities for the opposing offense and a really good rebounder. I think you have a really good front court with a Jabari, with a Şengün, and with a rim-protecting big who's just the stud athlete, gets a lot of rebounds, blocks a lot of shots. And then you just kind of rotate all three of them. So I don't know if the center position has been addressed in totality, like its final phase before this rebuild, but I think it's off to a good start.
No, it is. And look, this is the dream scenario when they got rid of Christian Wood to start clearing space.
Oh, yes.
This it could not have worked out any better because now the minutes have been carved out already. The opening on the roster is right there. You know, it's a different era in NBA basketball where you don't have the Ewings and Elijah Wans and the big-bodied centers that you have to have on every roster. We saw that in the finals. We saw that even Boston, who had size that could shoot threes and be versatile when they blocked shots, rebounded, and they got out and ran the floor like Williams and like Horford. So we also saw Golden State's got a 6'6 guy that rotates between the two spots in Draymond. And other than that, Looney's a guy that can fill minutes for him, but he doesn't play extended time because he doesn't play the NBA the way it's played today. You've got those guys now, and you could add one more, but the fact is you've got enough size, but with length, that's the biggest thing. Their reach, their length for the rebounds and blocking shots, that's going to be the key. This team's going to run, if it's possible, more than they did a year ago.
Yep.
And they've got better personnel to be able to do that.
Length and athleticism, something that they addressed in this draft. Center position, I think Looney's a good example. Like, he doesn't even need to necessarily be a starter. But you want to give Silas a weapon to be able to go with a defensive-oriented lineup. If you're getting beat on the glass, go with a big center as well. I think that's kind of the next phase for the Houston Rockets. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Kelly Eco covers the Rockets for The Athletic. He was at the draft last night, if I'm not mistaken. He joins us next to discuss the Houston Rockets draft when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Kelly Eco coming back from New York. He was going to be in studio, got stuck in the Big Apple, and some travel arrangements right now keeping him away from the Killer Bees. We're efforting Kelly Eco. We think we'll get him back at some point today. 713-780-ESPN, your thoughts on the Rockets draft, namely Jabari at number three. Very, very fortunate for the Houston Rockets. Now, credit to Rafael Stone here, because Rafael Stone, we were saying, don't trade up. Don't trade up even if Banchero goes number one. Stay pat at number three, you'll get a good player. Now, we never thought in our wildest imagination that Jabari Smith would be that player, but there he was at three. 2141 saying the only thing that would have been better with this draft if Houston found a way to draft Walker Kessler. This is our Auburn guy. Defensive player of the year, outstanding rim protector, and a second Auburn guy. But I'll take getting Jabari. 2831, I like Jalen Green a lot, but I think Jabari ends up being the best Rockets draft pick since Hakeem Olajuwon.
It's possible, and anything's possible at this point, but we'll let Kelly Eco get in here and get into this conversation with us since he was at the draft. But, I mean, I think from an excitement standpoint, as much as Jalen Green brought excitement, when you look at a guy and you think about Yao was the first overall pick, and we know that Dream was, but to have a guy that for it really feels like was the first overall pick in this draft because he was hyped that for so long. Just a great feeling if you're a Rockets fan.
Let's go out to the HRMP guest line now. Kelly Eco out in New York covers the Rockets for The Athletic. Thanks so much for making some time, Kelly. Know that you're traveling around today. But Jabari, the pick there at number three, of course, caught everybody by surprise. You know, 15 minutes before the draft, you start to read the tea leaves a little bit. But what are the Rockets getting with Jabari in year one? What's his upside?
I think in getting Jabari, they're getting somebody who most people consider the most NBA-ready prospect. You know, he's a 3-and-D legit 6'10 wing that can, the knockdown shooter, the switchable defender 1-5. He's somebody that understands gaps, is going to fill in the spacing on the floor and not try and do too much. He's not going to overexert himself on the offensive end. He's going to allow Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green to flourish and just fill in the gaps where he may. And I think a player like that is a coach's dream. You know, someone that understands the game, who loves defense and wants to do the small things to make his team better. So I think that's what they're getting from day one from Jabari.
Kel, when you look at this, I mean, everybody's giving Orlando credit for keeping it as hush-hush as they did, but I think as much as that was quiet as kept and unbelievable that they did what they did, I think I find it even more unbelievable that Oklahoma City stood pat no matter what happened in front of them and still took Chet.
Yeah, I think that was a big surprise, too, because everyone thought, obviously, Jabari was going to go in the top two. You know, Chet was a strong candidate for top two as well, but Jabari more so. So I think once the Thunder saw, you know, Chet on the table, they kind of pounced on his potential, I guess. I guess they're playing it patient, whereas Jabari, I think Jabari is more of a fit for a team that wants to know what their identity looks like sooner rather than later. I think the Thunder are still figuring things out, and they're still going for prospects with, you know, upside. And I think that's why they went Chet. You know, that was so surprising to me and a lot of people.
Kelly Eco joining us on the HRNP guest line, covers the Rockets for The Athletic. What about the fit with Jabari coming in alongside Jalen Green, Şengün, KPJ around as well? I'm bullish for the pick, but what about the fit with the rest of the roster?
I think the fit is going to be a bit easier than how Christian Wood was, just because you're getting a guy in Smith that's going to want to take on those tough defensive assignments. He's going to want to raise the defensive ceiling of a team that finished dead last in defensive rating last season. He doesn't need the ball a ton. He's able to, as I said before, fill in the gaps and occupy those spaces that Stephen Silas wants to see in the corners and slots, top of the key. And just be a high-quality role player. It's important to have those kind of guys, especially in the team that's trying to set the culture, set the trend of a team first mentality moving forward. You need guys that will come in and will want to take on the scrappy work, you know, they want to do those tough assignments and shy away from the glitz and glamour that, you know, offensive basketball carries. So I think the fit should be easy from day one. He should be able to adapt quickly to what Stephen Silas is trying to do. He should be able to help those guys also become, you know, more positive defenders, you know, bringing a more enthusiastic energy to defense, because we saw last season, it looked like, you know, layup lines. It looked apathetic at times, like it was just a lack of experience and a lack of will at times. So I think Jabari brings that chip on the shoulder from day one. He brings that dog mentality. He brings that professionalism, and I think it's going to be infectious with the team.
Kel, when you look at it now, even more important than ever that you get guys that want to be here and you get guys with this this young core. And not that, and Eric Gordon has been what Christian Wood was not. And Eric Gordon has been the consummate pro, but it just seems like I thought Eric Gordon would be gone by this morning. I know that there's no real pressing rush, but don't you feel like between now and, say, the start of camp, they're going to find a new home for Eric Gordon?
I think, yeah, it's more palatable now than it was maybe 2 weeks ago because teams have been calling. They did call. Some called on draft night, you know, trying to get something done. And ultimately, you know, the Rockets aren't pressed to move him, but they do understand that Eric Gordon has higher aspirations in terms of championship basketball, in terms of getting back to postseason play. So, you know, if the right deal's on the table. And now it's a bit easier now because you do have some more wings under contract that you can control, you know, and develop going forward. So I do think it makes moving on from Gordon easier. Now, depending on the price, I'm not sure. I saw, you know, there were rumors of the Philly deal. You know, Phoenix has always been shifting around there as well, the Lakers as well. But it's going to come down to what does Steve Stone deem as a quality asset in return for Gordon, because they do value the intangibles he brings in the locker room. They do value the example set for the young guys and just how to be a pro, and he's still a productive two-way player. So it's going to come down to, are they willing to let go of him right now this early in the project?
Cal, do they need any more bigs? Because, you know, we were just talking about that. They still need, because are they going to keep Boban?
I mean, Boban, the problem with Boban is that on paper, you would think that he's going to be a solid rim protector and, you know, a great guy in the locker room, and he is. But I just think that they need one more big who's a bit more mobile.
Yep.
You know, someone like a perfect guy would have been a Mark Williams or Jalen Duren, you know, those guys. And that's kind of why I thought they might move up. But they're primarily seeking wings. So now you look towards free agency. A guy like Isaiah Hartenstein makes a lot of sense. That was in Houston. He left, developed, got better, came back, is a good passer. He can shoot. He can handle the ball a little bit, play and make a little bit, and he's a good defender. So guys like that fit that bill. I think that's something that the Rockets should be looking at, you know, to shore up their big man depth in free agency.
Kelly Eco joining us, covers the Rockets for the Athletic. Kelly, we heard from Tillman, we heard from Rafael Stone in the build-up for the draft, we heard from Rafael Stone last night as well, and you can still see and listen to the philosophy that it's still, look, a long-term thought before the Rockets are a playoff team. They want to build with young players. They want to build through the draft. When is there a realistic expectation for the Rockets to be contending for the playoffs again?
I think, if you want to talk play-in, I do think that this next summer they should be able to bring in one, you know, star talent. I think they have enough space to do so. Houston has always been seen as a premier asset in terms of, you know, the money you can save, the lifestyle you can have, you know, yada, yada, yada. But realistically, if you want to talk about a playoff team, we're talking about maybe 25, 26 season. You know, 25, 26, 24, 25, possibly. But it's really going to come down to how big of a leap do these guys take in the next 12 months? You know, are they willing to listen, to adapt and learn under Steven Silas, under John Lucas, under those guys? Are they able to take those games and lumps of experience and turn them into, you know, productive seasons and productive careers? That's going to tell you how quickly they process information and how quickly they'll be able to raise Houston's, you know, floor and ceiling.
Kel, I got to ask you quickly about the other two picks. To me, it seemed like they hit on those two, because I think Eason is Garuba with more offense because he can shoot it, and he can shoot it from three a little bit, and he also can run, he can finish. And then I think Ty Washington, not only is he potentially a point guard of the future for this team, but he gives you insurance depending on what happens with KPJ this year.
Yeah, that's the nail on the head. And that's why they call Jota OG. It's perfect. I think Ty. The way I understand it, the Rockets had him high on their board, and they were surprised that he was still available at 29. So that's why they pounced on that. That was typical best player available type thing. With Tyree Eason, the moment he came in to work out, they were impressed with how he measured, of course, but the intangibles, the analytics that showed his defense and how he can impact the game on both sides of the ball. He's a good cutter. He's great in transition. He's a confident player. He still needs a little bit of fine-tuning, you know, in terms of IQ and situational awareness, but he's a young player that will come with time. But defensively alone, he can handle 1-5. And that combination paired with Jabari Smith gives them a lot of possibilities going forward. They want to get better as a group. After finishing dead last, like I said. So with Easton and Washington, you know, you're getting guys. And also, Tyco has a 6 foot, I think 6.5 wingspan, and he's a great playmaker. He's going to get a lot of chances to show that under Coach Cal because he was playing off the ball a lot. But yeah, I think this was a great draft night for those guys. And it kind of set the tone of what they want their rebuild to be going forward.
Kelly, we really appreciate the time, especially with you traveling. Safe travels back to H-Town. We'll hope to talk soon.
Yes, sir.
It's Kelly. Yes, sir. Kelly Eco covers the Rockets for The Athletic. He talked about when the Rockets could start contending again. Let's discuss that next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You're getting a hard worker. You're getting somebody who's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, somebody who's going to come in and compete from day one, somebody who don't care about stats, somebody who's going to do anything a team needs him to do. Is that defend, score, anything, you know what I'm saying? So you're getting a hard worker, competitor, somebody who don't like to lose. All I care about is that W.
That was Jabari Smith after he met with ESPN soon after he was drafted number 3 by the Houston Rockets. One of the two things I take from that soundbite, one, pretty different from when Jalen Green was drafted and said he wanted to average X amount of points, wanted to win the Rookie of the Year. Jabari Smith saying, look, I want to win, and we're going to win, which I like to hear that. I like that attitude, especially from a very young player. Meanwhile, you had Paolo Banchero saying that he'd rather go to 10 All-Star games as opposed to winning 2 titles. Was that what he said? I believe that's what Brendan told us earlier. So I like that point.
You know why he got that, though? He was listening to our shows and was trying to figure out, was it better to win a Super Bowl or go to the Hall of Fame?
One other thing, yeah, I think he was listening because he was listening to a lot of Houston radio because he knew he was going to slip to number 3. One of the other things that I really liked about the draft, look, I love getting Jabari. I'm bullish about Jabari. You heard me say that I think upside, high-end ceiling, that he can be an elite scorer in the NBA because of his size, because of his shooting ability, and because of his quickness. I think he could become Kevin Durant. High-end upside if he totally fulfills all his potential. He's got some things to do to get there. Handles, getting to the rim, attacking the rim. I also would like to see him take a little bit more high-percentage shots. He settled for a lot of 18-footers in college, which I didn't love. But the other thing there, too, is I much rather have Jabari Smith at number 3 than Jabari Smith at number 1. Like, I believe in the chip on the shoulder. I believe on the, wow, I'm scorned. I believe in the, well, if I'm Jabari Smith, I think I'm better than Banchero. I think I'm better than Chet Holmgren. So if you're drafted number 3, you're immediately given that attitude as opposed to going number 1. You don't have that chip on your shoulder.
No, absolutely. And you look at the same reason why Bregman wears number 2. And you look at all these guys that have kind of used it as a little external motivation. And you know, you can go from the most severe of external motivators like Michael Jordan, and after watching The Last Dance, the way he had to create all these other kind of external distractions that pissed him off so that he could continue to play at a high level. I think I would be upset if he didn't get upset that he wasn't drafted number 1. I would have an issue if he was just like, yeah, it's cool, whatever, and I'm just here to play. I don't need the Calvin Cato, you know, leisurely approach to basketball.
Yeah.
You got, and this is the thing where I go back to what Lance has said about the football draft and how I kind of translate it to basketball or any sport when you're drafting players. The love of the game has to be important. The work ethic to want to work when no one says you have to. When you hear the story, he wanted to get the keys from the janitor. He wanted to get in the gym. He wanted to keep shooting. He wanted to work on his craft. That's the kind of stuff that you love to hear because you know this kid, no matter how much the coaching staff's going to work with him, he's going to want to get better himself. The self-motivation is big.
Yeah, one of the things that Cody Stoops, cutting that Bruce Pearl audio from his media availability yesterday, talked about that. He said how he gets to the gym every day at 6, and you know, he's working on his craft, working on his game. And look, I don't think that the gap is that, like, the love of the game, I think, matters. I don't think it matters, like, that much. I don't think it's that egregious. Like, to me, a good example of it's Jadeveon Clowney. Like, I don't view Jadeveon Clowney as somebody who really plays football to, like, win tons of games. Like, he's checking in, he's punching in, and he's punching out. But he's collecting his money. But he's still a good football player because of how talented he is. But if Jadeveon Clowney had that, you know, edge of desire that he loved the game and he wanted, you know, he had J.J. Watt's attitude. I think Clowney would be a 14, 15 sack guy as opposed to a guy who never got into double digit sacks in his career. And the closest he got, I believe, was 9.5. So I do love that attitude from Jabari. The one thing I wanted to get to with of what Kelly Eco said, 713-780-3776, if you want to join in on the discussion, he said, I asked him about the playoffs. When do you think that this team could go back into the playoffs? Because look, we're bullish of this draft. I think the entire city's bullish for this draft. I think a lot of times when you get bullish over a draft, you can kind of speed through realistic expectations of a team. We know that the Rockets last year were not a very good team. Bottom half of the league, right? They were the worst record in the entire league. They were the worst defense in the entire league. So they still have a long way to go. But ask Tim, when do you start looking at the playoffs? If you're the Rockets, so I'll ask you that, Blankers. When do you think the Rockets could be a contender for the postseason again?
I think, you know, here's the thing that when you and I have even discussed this on and off air, the bigger concern to me is the West is just loaded. So it's not going to be like, you know, when you're primed and ready, you're still going to have to beat some good teams. And the teams ahead of you have also gotten better. You look at what New Orleans does just by adding Zion next year and then a full year of CJ McCollum to go with Brandon Ingram and the guys they already have. And you say, okay, well, there's another team that's going to be in your way. I think the Spurs might be regressing a little bit. They might be coming backwards a little bit. That helps you. But I think as long as this nucleus stays together and kind of continues to play together and get to know each other, I would say realistically in about 2 years.
See, I think that you can start making playoff moves next offseason because we talk about this too. And I think what Eco said where you start contending for the play-in because that's two different conversations. Now you're looking at being a 10 seed as opposed to being a top 10 team in the Western Conference and then winning a game or winning even two, depending on where you're at, to get into the real NBA postseason and the gimmick that it is. But also the fact that you're going to have salary cap space because your best players are going to be young. Everybody's coming off the books. You know, the salary fillers that you got in the Christian Wood trade, Eric Gordon, whatever happens to him, John Wall's in the final year of his deal. So you're going to have money next offseason, and you're also the following year not going to have your first-round draft pick. Yeah, you have Brooklyn's. You're monitoring to see what Durant and Kyrie decide to do. But knowing you only have one more year of your pick, I think that's when the Rockets start spending money. A year from now, going into that following season, I think that's the start of what could be a Rocket play-in window.
You hit it on the head, and this is how we always compare, and I've said for years now, as it relates to the Texans and the Rockets, they have been mirror images of one another. But the same way we said there's going to be a time in the next year or so that they start spending on free agency, the time for the Rockets, though, and I think that the Rockets are a little bit more ahead of the Texans simply because they already have a year of Jalen Green. They already have a year of their young players and their young core. Now they've added another one. They have the potential to add even more next year. But more so than any of that, John Wall thing is going to be huge. When you get 40-some-odd million dollars off your cap, that's when you know the bank is open for business and you're going to be able to do some things. And so in the meantime, the key is going to be to make sure that these guys have some kind of cohesion between them, some chemistry. Because guys on the outside looking in as a veteran aren't going to want to play with a complete start-over reset.
Yep.
But if they see a core of young players that can really play and they can play together and they go, I want to be a piece that takes that team to the next level, I can do that. Then you got the money, they have the ability, and you take the next step up.
I think we're going to view the Rockets and the Texans the same way next year. Yep. We're, like, if they win games because of young talent, great. If they lose games because of young talent, but they're competitive and showing development, that's just as good, and maybe even better long-term. So very, very excited about the young core of the Rockets, especially with Jabari sliding to number 3. Now, how much does this impact your Rockets' optimism? Because there was about a 15-minute window last night when Woj was saying that Banchero all of a sudden is going to be the pick at the top of the draft. So knowing that Banchero was the pick at number 1, and then he didn't say that OKC was going to go to Chet for like 15 minutes. So you had about a 15-minute window where you're thinking Chet Holmgren could be a Houston Rocket. So whenever you saw Chet go to number 2, how did it go from worst case to best case in that short window of time, a quarter of an hour?
1 second. The minute, because like I'm sitting there on the couch.
I couldn't believe it.
Lisa's got the girls and they're running around and I was getting ready. Creighton was wanting me to join him. And I'm like, boy, I'm trying to just kind of get my mind around the fact that Chet is really going to be a Rocket. And look, again, you think more highly of him than me. Not that I don't think highly of him. I just think as it relates to the best fit for this Rockets team, he was too much of a project for the guys that are already showing some polish and coming together. And the fact that when Silver came out, And I'm like, here we go. And the fact that Chet came out of his mouth, I was like, my jaw just dropped. I was like, oh my God. They didn't have to lift a finger, and they just got the best player in the draft dropped right in their lap. I said to you guys, someone should start playing Christmas music because it's Christmas in June.
Yeah. So you didn't see the Woj tweet? I was trying to stay away from my phone. Oh, okay. So your window was longer.
Yeah, once we were texting, I had seen one tweet. The minute I put it down, is we started texting because I saw the tweet that said, yeah, Orlando is changing course. I was like, now I don't think I want to know anymore. And then I probably should have gone back and checked. But the fact that when he said Chet, I was like, oh my God, they just won the draft.
Yeah, see, I was looking at Twitter and Woj until the Rockets picked at number 3. And then I kind of stayed off of it for a little while. So I was a little quicker, I guess, to know that the Rockets were getting Jabari. But what was, like, I also conditioned myself for, like, those 10 minutes where I was like, okay, I started to talk myself into Chet. And look, I think of the two of us, I'm higher on Chet than you are. Yep. So I was like, I was okay with it. Like, I was like, all right, Chet's going to be a Houston Rocket. You know, that could be fun. We'll watch the development of this, you know, baby giraffe, see what he can turn into. But I think that he can be an all-star in the NBA. I don't like him as much as Jabari. But as soon as Paolo was going number one, I didn't think there was any chance at Jabari. And then when I saw the Woj tweet that the Oklahoma City Thunder were sticking with Chet, I was like, you have to be kidding me. How did the Rockets get the best player in this draft?
Well, at least you weren't watching, what's his name? Chris Haynes?
Chris Haynes? What was he doing?
Chris Haynes was dead set on the fact that Oklahoma City was taking Jabari.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then he saw Shams and Woj. And, yeah, it was crazy. You know, I thought Sam Presti is such a cagey personnel guy. He's so big on, you know, because he always goes and gets the European players too, because he scouts the whole world. He's that kind of guy with no stone left unturned. And I'm like, he's got to be smart enough, no matter what he sees in Chet, to realize if this guy was the number one projected overall by almost every draft prognosticator coming into this draft, and he could have him, and he's desperately trying to find the next Kevin Durant for Oklahoma City and that small market team, instead of waiting a couple years to develop Chet, it's got to be the right move for them, right? Then it wasn't, and I was like, oh my God, the Rockets just won the lottery.
Tell me what Chet can do that Jabari can't. Like, I don't see it. Jabari can do everything offensively that Chet can and better right now.
I was going to say, and better, yes.
With more athleticism and more upside, in my opinion. 713-780-3776. We'll step aside for a moment. When we come back, Chris Mad Dog Russo. We've seen him more often with Stephen A. Smith here, but also a high heat on MLB Network. The Mad Dog joins the Killer Bees next.
Stevie!
ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.